Hello and welcome to Think Rant. Today is 26th of May 2011. I'm John Stabler, your host, and with me as usual, my co-hosts, Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And Trevor Williams.
Hello.
First of all, the breaking news is that the rapture happened, and all of the good Christians have gone.
Indeed we have.
No, Steve's in a different location this evening, so he's told us it's heaven, and that's how I know that the rapture did happen, because he's the only good Christian that I do know, so it makes complete sense. Do you know any other Christians that have gone, Trev?
Well, are there any other ones there, Steve?
Well, just
have a look
just,
around.
Well, you can tell by the echo, it's, you know, not exactly rammed. Yeah, there's a bit of space around. There's Harold over there. Hi, Harold. How's it going? And just having a little chat to God there. It's good.
See, if he had, then at least that means we don't have to listen to him banging on about his failed, his next idea.
Yeah, which he's rescheduled it for the 21st of October, I believe. That was nice.
Well, that's just the end of all things, dude. You know, that's where it's all going to end. It's not just a rapture. Everything's coming to a close that day.
Oh, but it happened anyway, but it only happened spiritually. And I don't know if you guys heard, but I won the lottery, but I only did it spiritually. So,
oh, congratulations. What are you going to do with that spiritual money?
Give
it to charity.
Gamble it.
Donate it to the Catholic Church.
Yes, of course.
Awesome. So, I mean, I don't know how much you want to beat up on Harold Camping. I mean, it was ridiculous from the start. And, I mean, I think half the media coverage was undeserved, you know, because it just took up a lot of time when, you know, the media could have been covering, you know, children dying and, you know, women being raped and stuff.
It was a complete non-story from the start, wasn't it? You know, there was... you just got some crazy right-wing nutter talking nonsense. And the fact that it actually got as many column inches, as many hits, as much time spent to it on the web is just ridiculous. I mean, you know... As you say, was there nothing else to report in the world last week?
Hey, a crazy right-wing nutter talking nonsense. Do you remember the 80s? Fleet Street was just... busting for something like this.
This is true.
I think it actually served a very good purpose as well, because hopefully it made some of the diehard religious mentals who never really examine their own faith think about it for a while.
The sad thing is I don't think they will. I think it'll just be a case of quick rationalization, like Camping's done. You know, something that was meant to be amazing has become very not amazing because it's just spiritual, you know. It was rationalized away very quickly. And I think people who have a massive emotional and financial investment in something like this are just, they're not going to actually think, yeah, I might have been a bit of a dick saying that. It's more likely that they're going to just carry on, you know, ad hoc rationalization.
That's true, but we knew that these kind of things happen all the time. There are all sorts of cults that say that the world's going to end and it never happens, and then they change the date. And this is the first one to have got this amount of prominence.
Yeah, no, definitely. But that's the nature of the media now, isn't it? Because, you know, the internet allows the spread of memes like this. So, you know, it's kind of to be expected. You know, I mean, we can't just say that it's purely the media, because you probably find a lot of the media are just soundboards for what's big on the internet now, believe it or not. It was a...
You could say it's just his 15 minutes, but he's after another 15 minutes on the 21st of October.
Yeah, I mean, but are people going to have more, you know, end-of-the-world parties or not, you know?
I think we should.
Well, I mean, I have a party every night anyway, so it's not a problem. But, you know, there was a concerted effort by, you know, some of the atheists and maybe some of the, you know, obviously the less fundamental believers who wanted to mock them and throw parties. You know, are they going to do it next time round? I mean, how much more time do we want to give this Muppet?
What, is it just an excuse to celebrate and drink? Okay.
Well, yeah,
Okay.
okay. Yeah, good
My
point.
life is one long party.
I am
I'll set
surprised, Ryan,
aside
that
one night.
we're, almost a week later and there's been no litigation against him in America yet. That does surprise me.
But that's what I mean, is because the people who bought into this, they haven't actually thought, oh, I've just realised this is a load of bollocks, and then done the sensible thing, maybe try and get some cash back out of him. No, they've just rationalised it away and said, oh, obviously there's just something a bit wrong. It was spiritual, and it'll happen on the 21st of October, and they'll do it in October as well. So,
It's true.
right. So, Trev, have you got a
Hello.
story for me?
Oh yeah. Actually, yeah. Can you jingle me?
Oh, it's we're gonna you're going off that soon,
I'm
are you?
going there. Oh yeah. Going off that soon. I remember you.
You've got
Okay,
it.
you kind of have to piece that joke together.
We
I
usually
may
do with
start
your
on the.
gags.
Thank you. I like to credit my audience with intelligence, so they're not all for you, you know. I may say desperately inappropriate things. My blood sugar's a little low, but I've eaten lots, and it should be coming up.
Okay.
But if I start to say jokes that are just completely strange and off the wall, well, actually, they normally are. So, okay, do you have the jingle?
I did
'Cause
just
I
play
love
it,
me my
didn't
jingle.
I? All right, okay, right, silence, and I'll play it again.
Okay. I did
They,
not hear
yep,
that.
that was the sound of silence.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
You can't hear it, but it played, okay?
Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
Now I've got two. Excellent. Right. The Pope received papers for the cause of Archbishop Sheen, whom he knew. Now, a bishop, Daniel Jenke, presented Pope Benedict two thick volumes about the life of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. And the Pope surprised him by saying, "Oh, yeah, I worked with this bloke." Pope Benny told me something I hadn't known, said Bishop Jenke. He worked on the commission for mission at the Second Vatican Council with Fulton Sheen in the 1960s. There's a sphincter tightening moment for you. He hands over these two books, and then he hears, "Oh, yeah, I knew him." Now, this guy, either he didn't read the books, which he should have, or he read them, and the Pope wasn't in the book. Maybe he was in it, but I've forgotten about him. Forgotten about the Pope. What the hell's he going to do to me? Or maybe he isn't even in the book. A man of such little importance to Fulton Sheen. That guy's not going to be made a saint, is he?
But maybe you got confused because, maybe it said Cardinal Ratzinger or something in the book, and everyone knows him as Benny now.
Could be, but Ratzinger. I mean, really, you're not going to forget that one.
I suppose not. No.
Somebody is not going to be made a saint. It
Oh.
might not be this Fulton Sheen fella, maybe it's just Dan Jenke. But I just think in that moment, he must have cacked his pants, really. The documentation involves obviously, there's got to be miracles. And this guy, he died in, I think it was 1975, something like that. Can't find it, but yeah, I believe it was. Two people prayed to him, and they all got better. Let's see. The Monsignor said he could not reveal many details about this one case, but this is a quote. Basically, this baby was born with several life-threatening diseases, any one of which would have been very serious for this infant. The parents and family and friends prayed for the intercession of Archbishop Sheen. They had the baby baptized, and I believe his middle name is Fulton. It seems to have been a miracle. Baby lived. Seems to have been cured of those illnesses. Brilliant.
Wow.
That's what passes for a miracle these days.
Yeah, I mean,
A baby seems ill and then is prayed about and then seems to have been cured of some illnesses.
wow,
Excellent.
that's pretty rubbish, isn't it? I mean, do you know what the miracle was for John Paul II? What's ascribed to him now?
Didn't he heal some woman, like motor neurone disease or something?
Yeah, some young woman who is actually named, you know, she's devoted her life to Catholicism, and the prayer supposedly cured her of something, but the guys came up forward and said, no, it was her chemo, or some whatever the treatment was. She was taking proper treatment for
Trev,
it.
Trev, how naive, Trev, how naive. Surely, you know, you've got to believe.
Are you poor?
Because you know, I do.
See, he just had to get the miracle story in, didn't he?
Excellent.
No, I was mentioning saints and miracles. Now, this is out of my memory, so if somebody tweets or something and says you're talking out your ass, then I'll be corrected. But I'm pretty sure that...
We know which thing they're talking about there, then.
Well, okay, thank you very much.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
Thomas Aquinas, he became a saint. Do you know what his miracle was?
This is true. Nope.
What happened was, apparently, and this is the usual way the Catholic Church works, is obviously they need to look for the miracles after the death. So they're looking for any story, basically, aren't they? You know, and as long as, you know, as long as it doesn't sound too ridiculous, it'll do. Now, Thomas Aquinas, his miracle apparently was that while he was on his deathbed, he asked for a fish sandwich. Okay. Right.
I feel this one, yeah.
So, right. Yeah, so, okay, so there is a bit more to it. He asked for a fish sandwich of a particular variety. Unfortunately, they didn't have that variety, okay? So they thought, well, sorry, we'll give him this other one. So it's something like he wanted a tuna sandwich, and they didn't have tuna. So they gave him, I don't know, a hake sandwich instead, okay? Thinking, he won't know the difference, he's nearly dead. And then apparently, after he died, he looked at the sandwich, and it changed to tuna. Can you believe it?
Incredible.
That silence
amazing.
Shows how in awe you are of that miracle.
Yes, indeed.
I'm just staggered by the way that they just ran off and got him a fish sandwich. It sounds like that's a thoroughly revolting term for something that he had denied himself all of his life and thought, I'll sod this, being in the clergy stuff. I want to have me a, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, he's probably using it as a euphemism, but they didn't
exactly.
get it.
They just took it literally and said, oh, we haven't got any of that fish in the fridge. Oh, no.
He probably died when they actually brought down a fish sandwich, and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, that's it.
That is so not what I ordered. I've got to get the hell out of here.
Ah, great. Okay, so I tell you what, seems as we're going to be doing features early in the podcast, I'm going to get my feature out of the way now.
Well, just before we do, can I very quickly come in with one here? And that's Steve's got a Catholic story this week.
Whoa! Go on then.
Oh yes, apparently, this is quite an amusing one, this is a very quick one. Pope shuts down a regular monastery in Rome. But the Pope has shut down a famous monastery in Rome because of rumours of lack of liturgical, financial and moral discipline. And yeah, he's closed it down because they had a fashion designer from Milan took over as abbot, and he left 2 years ago. But in the meantime, he's renovated the church and turned it into a hotel, holding regular concerts, televised Bible reading marathon, and celebrity visitors, and attract them with an unconventional approach. And one of the nuns, Anna Nobili, is a former lap dancer who apparently did some dancing in the services.
Wow.
With other nuns. Yeah.
You know, that's just so typical of the Catholic Church. They've got somewhere that people actually want to go, and then they shut it down. Typical.
Why can't they just take the glitter ball and put it in with all of their weird staffs and incense and silly hats?
Exactly. I mean, you know, stick some laser lights in there as well. That'd be a pretty awesome show.
Yeah.
To be fair, I would pay good money to see a lap dancing nun. But that's just me.
I mean, it doesn't actually say that she was lap dancing. I mean, that's the inference, obviously. But yeah, I think that's what we're meant to be led to believe. But actually, no. It just says she was dancing with other nuns.
Can you imagine if when you went in, they said, free glass of wine at the front. And eat this wafer. By the time it reaches your stomach, it's an E. Oh, that's the way.
Good thinking, Trev. Transubstantiation to ecstasy. Brilliant. Well, that's great. Another Catholic story. I bet you've got another Catholic story for later, haven't you, Trev?
You just said for later. Yes, I have. So,
That's terrible.
I
It's time
apologize.
for the regular feature. Guess the year.
Brilliant.
You guys know the rules,
Whoop.
and I will just quickly explain them for people who are listening for the first time. I will slowly read out some factoids that come from a certain year, and then either Trev or Steve, once they think they know, will shout out their name, followed by what year they think it is. If they're correct, they win a pint. If they're wrong, they're locked out of the next clue. So, are we ready?
Ready.
Yep. Although isn't a factoid like an incorrect fact?
Is it? I thought it was like
It might be.
a small fact.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
I think that's how it's come to be known, but the dictionary definition is still that it's like an urban myth.
Okay, we'll just go with their clues because they're real, they're true.
Okay.
Okay.
It's just that given that this is the round that it is, I'm probably wrong because that's what I
This
do.
is true, Trevor. This is true.
I'm hoping that this one might give Trevor a chance, okay?
How have you prepared for this week, Trev? Have you had, massage and ready and raring to go?
I have as little knowledge as I ordinarily do, plus my blood sugar's been a bit hazy all day.
Might
So,
help you
my
achieve
hopes
some
aren't
sort of
high.
spiritual sort of place then.
Okay,
That's
before
right,
we
I'll win
start,
spiritually.
I also got to say thanks to the missus because she was the one who sent me these clues, and all I had to do was edit it down to pick 10, basically. So thanks very much to her. Are we
And
ready?
cheers, Amy,
Amy.
for sending me the answer as well. It's
Yeah, I don't believe she'd do
very
that.
helpful. Oh, yeah.
Here we go. May the 17th, the World Health Organization removes homosexuality from its list of diseases. January the 7th, the Leaning Tower of Pisa is closed to the public because of safety concerns. May the 22nd, Microsoft releases Windows 3.
Steve, 1986.
Nope, you're wrong, sorry, you're locked out of the next clue. April the 1st, Strange Ways Prison Riot. The longest prison riot in Britain's history begins at Strange Ways in Manchester and continues for 3 weeks and 3 days.
Trev, 1984.
No, sorry.
Oh, man.
December the 25th, Tim Berners-Lee creates the first web page on the first web server. July 25th, George Carey, Bishop of B Bath and Wells, is named as the new Archbishop of Canterbury.
Steve, 2005.
No, sorry. What, Tim Berners-Lee created the internet in 2005?
Don't know.
Sorry, the
Obviously
web.
not.
November.
Trev, 1987.
No, sorry.
Ah.
I meant 1995 anyway.
November the 22nd, Margaret Thatcher announces she will not contest the second ballot of the leadership election for the Conservative Party.
Steve, 1990.
Correct. Steve wins again.
Sorry, Trev. I did my best, eh? I threw in a ludicrous year.
Yeah, well, that was, I
It's
mean,
okay.
2005, that's ridiculous.
It was ridiculous, I have to be honest.
So now you're even helping me. See, but it's good. It's for the best, really, because I keep on having a tiny shred of hope that I'll actually win one of these one week, and it's best if we crush that. It's not helping me. So
Yeah, I think you're gonna
I'm
win.
happy, in fact.
Yeah, you'll win in that week when I the first clue is this was the year that Trevor was born. Although if Steve beats you
Thanks.
to that, then
Yeah, maybe.
there's no hope.
1973.
No, the year that the time that I actually win this game, it'll be this was the year that Trev joined Think Rant podcast. Can you remember that far back?
2005.
Ah, great. Okay. So, does anyone want to do a new story, or shall I launch into something?
Go for it.
Oh, actually, there's one, a very small thing I'm busting to tell you guys about. In last Friday's Metro was something incredibly interesting. And it wasn't a story. It was an ad for the live stage Peppa Pig show in Cardiff's new theatre. The advert promised special prices for under-16s and families. Now, that's worrying for two reasons. First, there was a misuse of the possessive apostrophe in under-16s.
Oh.
That was annoying. Oh, the under-16s what? But special... second was the assumption that anybody who isn't under 16 or a family member would go to one of those shows at all. If there's some creepy loner in a Mac who wants to see Peppa Pig, I'd bloody hope that his ticket is expensive. Prohibitively expensive. Hopefully. What? I hope it's just a sign that they've adopted that policy.
Well, surely there may be genuine people who just like Peppa Pig. You know, it doesn't have to be a dirty man in a Mac.
Spoken like a man who's never seen Peppa Pig.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I haven't seen Peppa Pig yet. The boy's not old enough yet. Okay.
Catchy theme tune, though.
I'll take your word for it. Okay, guys, I want to talk about, and we might get serious on this one, super injunctions.
Okay.
Now,
cool.
They sound cool because it's got the word super in front of it, but they're not really, are they? So... Are we allowed to actually name the footballer? Yeah, I can't remember.
Yes.
All right, that's
he's been all over the papers now.
It hasn't been removed from the super injunction, but it's very much in the public domain.
Okay. So
the first time you mention him, mention that you've seen it somewhere else. Yeah. And then it's in our conversation.
All right, okay. So yeah, I saw this thing on Twitter revealing who the footballer was.
Go.
And apparently they say, although you know you don't know for sure, that it's Ryan Giggs. So, first of all, guys, forget the story because I'm not interested in who Ryan Giggs has been nobbing. But what are your feelings on super injunctions? Do they have a place? You know, we're looking freedom of speech versus privacy here.
I don't think they do have a place, but I guess really, in terms of the case which you just mentioned there, why is it in the public interest for the media to report that anyway? I mean, the other super injunction which came out this week was obviously Fred Goodwin's, wasn't it? Where he's allegedly had an affair with a senior colleague when he was at Bank of Scotland. And obviously the inference there is, you know, did that impede the work that he was doing? Did it somehow, you know, maybe lead to some sort of machoism of him, you know, gambling away everyone's money just to impress a woman, as some people might have suggested?
But surely it was
so there could
Ryan
be a public
Giggs
interest
his,
in that.
Yeah, but surely Ryan Giggs, you know, getting his leg over, that might affect his game. So, you know, you could use the same thing.
But it didn't affect his game because Manchester United won the league and he was one of the players of the year. So... it clearly didn't affect his game. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, I just think, really, yeah, I don't agree with super injunctions, but in terms of some of them, bearing in mind John Terry was the other one last year, Andrew Marr was another one this year, you know, these are people who have taken on super injunctions just basically covering up the fact that they've had an affair. Frankly, I don't give a damn. I really don't give a toss.
There's
you know,
something about the affair as well, not being any of our business, because they might have kind of open marriages where a wife might have said, you know, we'll both go off and we'll do our own thing, but if anybody finds out, that'll be the end. You know, we don't know. There's only two people in that marriage. So if there are any rules like that, there's only Ryan Giggs and Mrs. Giggs who are going to know about it. But now that it's all made public, and it's nobody's business.
Exactly. I mean, there is an issue here. I mean, the original, I believe, first super injunction was the injunction raised for Trifigura, the toxic waste company or oil company dropped a load off the Ivory Coast a few years ago. I think that was the first time a super injunction was used. And that obviously is in the public interest. There's something in there which should be reported. And absolutely, you know, in those cases, there should be no super injunction. It's ridiculous.
I think it's a bit misleading to just talk about the super injunction all the time. And like they have on on the TV news, whenever they've got somebody to talk to, they'll say, "How legal is a super injunction? Do you think it has a basis in our constitution?" Well, we don't have a freedom of the press. We don't have a freedom of speech. In America, they've got both of those things, but they also guard privacy fairly well. But there's a fair usage policy for repeating things, and there's a public interest policy for investigating things. That seems a brilliant way to work it out. Actually, give us a constitution that defines what the role of our press should be, and that way, you don't have to be incredibly rich to have privacy. I don't care if they sort out super injunctions because I'll never afford one.
True.
Yeah.
I think it's a right of the British people that we should be able to hold the press to account just the same as a rich person should be able to.
No, I agree with that completely. And but the thing is, the press, by reporting this kind of gossip, are pandering, unfortunately, to the public who were all too willing to buy the papers, you know. And so, you know, if the if the need wasn't there for this sensationalist gossip, then what, they wouldn't bother, would they? So it's kind
That's
of cap,
true,
you know.
but they know how to write a headline to make people want to read. They'll say the secret of the super injunction is out, and then you think, well, what is it? Come on, I've got to buy the paper. It's only going to be 50p or whatever, and that'll draw people in. But if those stories were removed, nobody would care. Do you really think that they'd be able to get like a march to go to the publishers and say, "We want our gossip back. Bring it back. Our tea breaks are rubbish. I want to talk about what Amy Winehouse has done. You know, or what Pete Doherty has been seen doing, or who Pete Doherty has been seen doing, or whatever." It's pointless nonsense, and nobody would miss it if it were gone.
I
The
think there's
question.
a.
Oh, go on.
No, go on, John, you carry on.
I was just going to say, well, the question is, surely, you know, how do we decide what is in the public's interest? And, you know, how are we going to define that and make sure that the judges are sticking to it? Especially if we're not going to find out who's got super injunctions.
Sure, but that's the kind of thing that will be, if there were a framework of a proper written constitution, like I would hope, then that's the sort of thing that would be tested and proved by rulings. The
Okay.
individual cases would make the law. That's
But
just
off
how
the
it works
top
in
of your
America.
head, I mean, if I said to you now, go on and give us a way that we could, you know, say what's in the public interest or not, how would you define it? Would you be able to?
I'd say they'd have to defend it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, fair enough.
And in that case, almost every instance of somebody just having an affair is nobody's business but, well, the three people, really.
I agree with that.
So do you think the Fred Goodwin thing shouldn't have been, you know, he was entitled to an injunction, or, you know, he was entitled to that privilege?
The Fred Goodwin thing, though, like I said, the fact that he had an affair isn't an issue. The fact was that he had an affair with a senior partner within the business, which he's responsible for selling down the toilet,
Yeah.
basically,
An inappropriate
and
relationship of any kind,
did
yeah.
that inappropriate
Yeah.
relationship with another senior colleague within the business have a negative impact upon that business? Did it, that is that what caused, or was it contributory to the collapse of the bank? And I think that is in the public interest to know that. I mean, unfortunately, our media portray it from the point of view of, oh, dirty Fred, not only was he screwing with your money, he was screwing with his colleagues as well. You know, that's the kind of way our media report it, rather than looking at it from the point of view of, you
Well
know,
said.
did his actions or his relationship with that woman cause any of the issues which you saw at RBS?
Yeah, it would be great if the journalist sat around thinking, is this, have we got a good enough cause to investigate this for possible corruption or something similar? Instead of
Exactly.
thinking, what was she wearing? Is she fit? Can we get a photo on the front page? Which is, we know that's what they actually thought.
Absolutely. One of my concerns about this, though, is obviously this week we've had heard about two super injunctions, Fred Goodwin's, Ryan Giggs. These are both brought up in Parliament through the use of parliamentary privilege. Now, the Fred Goodwin one, like I've said, okay, I can see why that would be worthy of being in the public domain. But the Ryan Giggs one, is that an abuse of an MP's power? Is he hiding behind parliamentary privilege?
And I think one of the things that was said on Newsnight when the point was put across to the MP, I can't remember the MP's name, who basically outed Ryan Giggs, it was, well, basically a judge, the judiciary, have made the decision that this person deserves privacy. And by you using your parliamentary privilege, you've basically made a subjective judgment yourself without knowing all the facts. And overruled a judge. And so basically, it is a case of politicians interfering with the judiciary. And so, I mean,
Absolutely, especially as part of the case which Ryan Giggs, I think, is used for raising the super injunction, is the fact that the woman involved tried to blackmail him.
I mean, unfortunately,
I mean, that's part of the case. We don't know, but
yeah, I
that's
mean,
my
that's in
point,
the
though, is
realms of
that that's
speculation there,
yeah,
and.
but that's my point, though, with the MP making that decision, is that he's made that decision to out Ryan Giggs without knowing all the facts of the case.
But surely our legislative body isn't allowed to mess around with the judicial because our constitution says, oh no, wait.
Yeah, that's my point exactly. The idea is they're meant to be separate, but obviously at the moment they're clearly not.
Yeah, implied constitution, which means anytime you want to ask a question about it, you have to employ a lawyer.
Yeah, and this annoys the hell out of me because I think I've had a fair few conversations, including one on Facebook, if I remember rightly, where somebody said, I'm a complete whinge bag because I want a written constitution, or I want a formalised
Yeah.
constitution. I'm a bit of a whinge
I
bag.
believe you're a hand-wringing liberal, actually.
Yeah, well, I might be guilty as charged, but I think people that just want to keep the status quo, because they're because the alternative progressive route is, aligned with liberal values, not their own, and rejecting it is just, turkeys voting for Christmas as usual.
Yeah, exactly. I've never needed a constitution, so why should I want one?
Well, I mean, it's like the
Well,
people, yeah, exactly, and it is like the people that were no to AV. They just didn't care, basically. They just didn't want to change the status quo because it scared them. And but they're the same people, no doubt, that are very vocal when politicians are misbehaving and they feel hard done by because they didn't vote for them and they're in a safe seat or whatever, and yet they weren't willing to do anything about it.
yep.
So okay, we kind of segued into something else there. Okay, who's got a story?
Well, you know what? Have you got, we're in serious stuff. I've got a second Catholic story.
Woo.
Woohoo! I know. I know. Okay. This one's quite serious, though. It says that misperceptions of abuse, of the abuse problem, is common, says this report. That's been compiled by the Catholic Church. It says several commonly held assumptions about clergy sexual abuse of minors are actually misperceptions. The report was released on May the 18th, and it's a major study on the causes and the context of the problem in the US. It says so many unacceptable, dreadful things that I don't know if I'll get through all of them
I've
without
seen
my
this,
eyes
yeah.
melting out of my face.
No, yeah,
Let's see.
that's good.
No single psychological, developmental, or behavioral characteristic differentiated priests who abused minors from those who did not, the report said. Well, does this mean that they were all potential pedos or all innocent, or is that actually completely irrelevant? It said most priests did not specialize in abuse of particular types of victims. The report said 70% of priests referred for abusing a minor had also had sexual behavior with adults. They bring this up so that when you say that priests are pedos, no, they're not. They've just done a couple of kids. But generally, they like doing it with grown-ups, even though they're not allowed to do that either. And that's not the most unacceptable thing. Let's see. It says, oh, the peak of the crisis has passed, and sexual abuse of minors continues to remain low. Yay!
Well, good to see it's remaining low. That's good to hear.
That's the main thing, isn't it? Yeah, it's nothing like it was from the mid-60s to the mid-80s when it was all over the place. Let's see. The report said media reports about Catholic priests who sexually abused minors often mistakenly have referred to priests as paedophiles.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Because in this
And also.
report, do they not, they redefine, because what they do is they define a paedophile as somebody who has sex with a child under the age of 11, okay?
Nearly 4 out of 5 minors abused were 11 or older.
Yeah.
And 11 generally is regarded in professional literature as an age of pubescence or post-pubescence. So that means that less than 5% of priests with abuse allegations exhibited behavior consistent with actual paedophilia.
Yeah.
So it's just pretend paedophilia if you just happen to, you know, screw a couple of children.
So what they did was
that's only pretend.
Yeah, yeah. What they did was obviously the numbers quoted in papers and stuff like that. They said, well, you know, if you're under 13, you're a child, and therefore if someone has sex with you, that person's a paedophile. But what the Catholic Church did, well, not, you know, whoever compiled this report for the Catholic Church did, was they just redefined what a paedophile was. By they realized if you knock 2 years off the age of the child, a hell of a lot less of them are paedophiles.
Yep.
Which is possibly the most disgusting
yeah.
move I've ever, statistical move I've ever
yes,
seen.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Did you hear the quote of 11 generally is regarded in professional literature? I think I know what professional literature they're talking about. No, 11, they're pubescent already. That's not young enough for a proper paedophile. And what the hell is actual paedophilia? There must be plenty of amateur paedophiles in prison cursing themselves right now for failing to point out this distinction in their court case. Your Honour, I'm an amateur pedo, not an actual pedo. I'm maintaining this statement.
I have
a
sex
pedo
with
for Britain in the Olympics.
It's disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
And the funny thing is, they're just basically trying to shift the discussion towards paedophilia away from what is rape. They still can't escape that 100% of the cases are rape, but they don't want to. They don't want to discuss that, obviously. And to be honest, and not long ago, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, they're very sorry about this now. You know, they're not trying to cover their asses. You know, they're saying they're sorry, and you know, it seems that they mean it. But this just goes to show again. They're too busy trying to cover their asses, and you know, why don't they just keep their mouths shut and or just apologise and just shut up about it rather than
oh god,
make
I
excuses,
wish, yeah.
Rather than make
it. Let me carry on though. There's worse.
There's more.
Yeah, features and characteristics of the Catholic Church, such as an exclusively male priesthood and the commitment to celibate chastity, were invariant during the increase, peak, and decrease in abuse incidents, and thus are not causes of the crisis. So it's basically saying it's not the Catholic Church's fault for making everybody celibate, because, look, we were doing it loads earlier, and we're not doing it so much anymore, and we weren't doing it that much beforehand. It's too many fallacies.
Too many fallacies.
The sexual abuse of minors is not a phenomenon unique to the Catholic Church. Brilliant. So, okay, we may have fucked a couple of little boys, but that doesn't make us gay or even paedophiles. We just went a little nick bend. And most of the kids were over 11 anyway. And I also fucked a grown-up once, so show me a little respect, eh? And we do it less these days, so go easy. You know what? If they stop making offensive statements of diversion about guilt and committing and disguising appalling crimes, then I'll stop bringing them up and getting bloody cross about it. But it's one of the most offensive things I've heard, and I haven't seen it anywhere in the regular press, actually. I picked that up by going straight to the horse's mouth.
No, that is absolutely shocking, John. I totally agree with you. I mean, I find it terrible that they just can't admit they were wrong. They just can't come out and say, do you know what? We were totally and utterly wrong. There's no excuse. We can't hide from it. What happened was wrong. It was bad. We're ashamed of ourselves, quite rightly so, and we're sorry. Why can't they just come out and say that?
Yeah, it's like a rapist coming out of prison and then saying, I'm really, really sorry for raping you that night when you were wearing that short skirt with all that makeup and looking all tarty. You know, just enough of a suggestion that maybe it was your fault too.
Yeah, or if you'd wore a
and
longer
about
skirt, you know, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Sorry for
Keep
that.
Nadine
That must
happy,
make
wouldn't
everybody
it?
furious.
Yeah, I'm
Oh,
actually
yeah.
going to upset you even more now with this
Oh,
next
man.
story, so you better get ready for this now. A group which is opposed to abortion in all circumstances and favours an abstinence-based approach to sex education has been appointed to advise the government on sexual health. The Life organisation has been invited to join a new sexual health forum set up to replace the independent advisory group on sexual health and HIV. Have we heard this story, gentlemen?
I can't say I have, no.
Yeah, I heard about it, but I heard about it in only two places, and I've been looking for this story. It's not getting nearly enough press, and I'm getting so furious about it. There's steam coming out of my pores right now. I'm just going mental.
So not only have what is a lobby group, as I said, everyone's entitled to opinion, and I got no problem with lobby groups lobbying, but a lobby group has been appointed to be on an advisory panel to the government. And in them taking that place, the government have disinvited the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, which has been providing pregnancy and counselling for the last 40 years. Okay, they've been disinvited, and their place has been basically taken by a lobby group. Now, as I said, I got no problem with lobby groups. Everyone has ideologies. I got nothing against that. Just as I would say, there shouldn't be a pro-choice lobby group on this advisory board. There shouldn't be any lobbying at all. But what's happened is the government's thought that, well, everyone on this advisory panel, they're all scientists, and
But
basically
what do
they're
they
all,
know?
well, what do they know? They're all liberal. There's no flaming conservatives on there. So we need to get in some pro-life people, basically. So that's what they've done, and it's been in the name of balance by the looks of it. And Trev, do you want to
Yeah,
start on this?
well, let's see. Stuart Cowie, Life's head of education, said, "We are delighted to be invited into the group representing views that have not always been around on similar tables in the past." But the thing is, they're not just representing views. Like you said, they're a pressure group, and it's an independent advisory group on sexual health and HIV. Now, Life's stance as a political organization has been to reduce sexual education. They don't approve of abortion at all, and it's that they don't agree with the idea of providing things like contraception anonymously, things like that. All of their advice, abstinence and stuff, leads to a higher incidence of sexually transmitted diseases and pregnancies. And at least in America, the highest proportion of people who seek out abortions are Catholics. So it sounds like I'm just choosing every option, every chance I get to have a go at Catholics.
No.
But yeah, in this, their advice has proven to be worthless. Their advice does not work. And that's absolutely scientifically shown that their approach does not work. So all they are is a pressure group that says we want to shut down the other side. They have no place on that board.
Yeah,
Oh, God. Furious.
and as I said, I got no problem with them lobbying. They got a voice like everybody else, and if they want to spend their money telling everybody that they shouldn't be aborting babies, they're within their right. But it's kind of like the government just wants to shoot itself in its own foot by watering down whatever advice it's got. I mean, the previous government, with the Drug Advisory Board, firing Professor Nutt, which obviously
Yeah.
led to anyone with any dignity on that board leaving. And then what the government did? They went and filled it full of people that would just go with whatever policy they went with anyway. And we're quite aware of David Cameron's position and Nadine's position on things like the abortion cut-off date. And this just looks like another step towards them basically filling up what should be evidence-based advisory boards with people who just share their ideology.
Yep, and it should be something that gets massive coverage. I've seen one very small opinion piece in The Eye, and I saw it reported in The Guardian, like the two of the leftiest liberalist papers, and very little elsewhere. Possibly because the people who decide what stories get on will think we don't want that on at tea time, and people get very squeamish because basically nobody wants to stand up and say abortions are great. Everybody have more abortions if you possibly could. Of course, it's a really tricky subject, and nobody wants to be advocating how wonderful it is. But having the choice is wonderful. Having the ability to control reproductive life is essential in a developed society.
So, Steve, you didn't catch this story, though.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of been hidden, so I'm not surprised.
I mean, I totally agree. I don't understand why this body is on a sexual health and HIV panel when they only campaign for one thing.
Yep.
Don't get it, really.
Yeah, and if you don't agree with abortions, don't have one.
Well,
Surely
yeah.
that's the end of it.
Yeah. It's about denying choice, basically. It's, I mean, and a lot of people just say, well, it's both sides are just trying to, inflict their opinions on the other side. But how is that? That's by definition, that's not the case, is it? Because people that want to ban abortion want to stop choice for everybody. Whereas a pro-choice person says, "Hey, it's up to you. If you don't want an abortion, don't have one." So I don't think it's the same at all. And so when people do things, when the government makes moves like this for the sake of balance, they haven't thought it through. They may be trying to balance arguments, but they're not actually balancing anything. And there's been allegations that obviously, if there's this lobby group on this advisory board, that it may lead to less information being revealed simply because they don't want ideological people using it, if you know what I mean. So we'll see how it goes. Anyone else got anything they want to talk about?
Well, on that story, that it's just that the every sperm is sacred idea is coming up over and over again, and the fact that nobody can be told, every time that a child is conceived, there's been a mass murder of millions of other potential lives. Surely you should be weeping every time there's a conception. If your definition of when life starts is that ephemeral and strange. Then you should
I
be.
think that sometimes it might be it's best maybe to take it to an even more absurd example, because a lot of people feel a bit disconnected from this idea of embryos spontaneously miscarrying, on day three or whatever, and this idea that every sperm is sacred. Some people don't connect with it, but I just say, well, if all life, and all potential life is important, then do you think it's immoral for a woman who's ovulating to turn down a man's advances? And that kind of brings home the kind
Good
of
point, yeah.
the absurdity of the position that all potential life is as important as life, because it leads to ridiculous things like
You haven't used that line to pull a Catholic girl, have you?
that. Yeah, I can smell you. You're ovulating. Come with me.
Your immortal soul may depend on it, love. Come
Yeah,
on.
come with me if you want to
Come
live.
on,
Yeah.
dude.
Yeah, I just think that's a cool example because it's something people can connect with, because it's so ridiculous. They're like going, yeah, actually, and it's basically you can justify rape as long as she's ovulating and ridiculous stuff like that. So, yeah. But no, I mean, and it's just silly because it's like week on week now, we're starting to see these stories of people making inroads into what seems to have been, we've had to fight for things like, women taking control of their own bodies and things like that. We've had to fight for that. And now it's slowly being undone. And it kind of mirrors the kind of thing that's been going on in America lately. Because
Yeah.
in the Bible Belt in the States, it's pretty much illegal to get an abortion now. simply because of the way the bills have been passed and they've been squeezing the legislation to make it so difficult.
Yeah,
And
you have to jump through hoops and you can't get it done in time to make it a legal termination, can you?
yeah. And
That
I'm
sort
just
of thing.
thinking, and not just that, with Nadine Dorris and her little abstinence thing, and she's trying to move in on some of the same legislation in the States, making people go to special counseling, jumping through hoops. I just think it's quite scary that now we've got a conservative government, we're seeing a lot more of this. And should we be scared that perhaps we are going to end up a bit more like the States now?
Well, that's an insane thing. I've studied counselling. If you have to mandate that somebody needs to go there, it'll do no good. People have to want to get something out of counselling for it to be effective. Now, if you spend lots of time with somebody, you can usually persuade them to come around. But if it's just a couple of sessions to deal with the problem, and the person is only going through the motions so that they can have their abortion, it's just stalling.
And I guess the counsellor as well in the United States would probably tend to be a pro-life counsellor as well.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think there was a story, I don't know if it was on the Guardian article, but there was an anecdote of a woman who wanted an abortion, and the GP referred her for counselling, and initially she went along with it. But it was something set up by this life charity who, and basically they were guilted. They went in there and they just made her feel guilty about wanting an abortion. That is not counselling at all.
No, not at all.
So, as I said, it was an anecdote, that I read today, and if it was true, then that is that we don't want to see more of that. So
Quite right.
okay. Well, I'm
I
all
have a
out of
story.
stories. Yeah?
I have one.
Go on.
I think this is one which, is a nice way to end things off this evening. The headline, Busted. Lawyer complains that large-breasted women working for his rival is distracting the jury.
Excellent.
A lawyer has been accused of sexism after complaining that a busty woman working for his rival was too distracting for the jury.
Yeah.
He basically saying that the male members of the jury in this small claims court would find the ample figure too distracting. And this is one of the great lines. He added that the woman's place at the front of the court is to draw the attention of the jury away from the relevant proceedings.
Wow.
Good grief.
That's great, isn't it? Only in America, I think, that one.
Was he talking about the male members of the jury or the male members of the male members of the jury?
Both, I think, to be honest with you. His argument is that basically he doesn't believe she's a trained paralegal, so therefore she shouldn't be there anyway. She's just there to show off her breasts. Obviously, the opposing side then claim that she is a trained paralegal. So I just thought it was quite interesting, actually, just to see that and see what your take would be on it, because I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it is sexist. Quite often, you say things or think things, and you suddenly realise after it's quite sexist. And I think he probably, he's probably more concerned in reality about the fact that he didn't think that she was, a properly trained paralegal, and it just came
But
out
how
that he.
weak must this case be?
Yeah. That's brilliant. The guy who he is representing must just have his head in his hands when he says
Exactly.
that. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, look at them. Come on, you can't concentrate on
Check
Mike
out the
Lyon,
rack on
who's
that.
clearly innocent, with those bouncing around. Come on. Can I have a retrial, please?
I think maybe it
Dear.
might just have been a bit of projection because obviously maybe he found it too hard to concentrate, and so he just assumed that the male members of the jury would have problems as well.
No, I think you may have a point
Oh,
there.
that's brilliant. The judge could say, "Could you please approach the bench? Can I have a minute?"
No. Can you approach the bench? Yes. No, closer. I can't. Closer. I can't. Ah, there you go. Okay. That's my penis joke for the evening.
Yeah. Cool.
Right at the end
well,
as well.
If we've got just a couple of minutes, there's another thing that I only caught a little bit of. Like, I think it was released by the Tories and then they decided to bury it. You know, Cameron's favourite two stupid words are big and society.
Yeah.
But also there was happiness and index floating around for his Tooley behaviour to tie something onto. He's got some figures lately that show how happy we're all feeling. People are feeling less miserable than expected. That's very precise and scientific, isn't it? Than expected. And British workers work on average several hours per week less than most Europeans.
Wow.
Did you know that? And
really?
Yet again, politicians abusing the term average to baffle the public. Given the massive amount of people sacked from public sector full-time jobs, the vast take-up of part-time jobs in replacement, and many companies like Asda, for instance, reluctant to employ any staff up to full-time hours because of the rights to which they would then be entitled. And, of course, in Cameron's big society, everyone's supposed to volunteer just a few hours a week. There are many ways to mess about with the figures and the word average to disguise the fact that in many parts of the country, full-time work is necessary to earn a living wage, and Britons work a longer full-time week than any European country. Those are the stats that I'm sure you're all familiar
yeah,
with and thinking, yeah. Where the hell did he pull that from?
You know, for him to say that we work on average less or whatever, that, you know, that goes against all the other evidence that I've seen that says that, you know, we're compared to the Europeans, we're workaholics. So he must have pulled that out of someone's rectum.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's selecting the data, cherry picking.
Cherry picking.
The mean mode and median averages. There's three very different averages that you can all legitimately call them an average, and they can each of them make a different conclusion.
No, definitely.
So, I'm sure it's that sort of deal. He's doing it to fool the public and pacify his party, and as the bonus effect of just pissing me off.
I'm sure he thinks that every time, Trev.
Yeah. Just piss Trev off.
Well, whenever he annoys you, just remember his translucent skin and how he got it.
That's right. Thank you.
That's okay, see?
Call back to about 7 episodes ago.
Yeah, so that's a joke for the regular listeners. Right. Don't laugh. All right, I'm going to promote some stuff now. Okay, people listening, obviously, you can download this on iTunes. You can listen to us live. We have a blog, which is at thinkrant.blogspot.com. We have a Twitter account, which Steve looks after. It's at thinkrant.
We have been monitoring this evening, and we've had, zero tweets.
Yes. We're going to work on promoting that. Also, there's a Facebook. If you want to check that out, just search for Think Rant Podcast on Facebook and you'll find us. And that's about it, really. So,
no, don't you dare tweet us. If one of you sons of bitches tweets us, I'm going to be furious.
don't tweet us. You'll upset Trev, you know, and especially if it's a Catholic story. Wow.
That's right.
So, yeah, so I'm all done this week, guys, so I don't mind closing up now, if that's all right with you.
I'm spent.
That's great. Are you done as well?
Yeah, I'm also done.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much, everyone listening, and we'll catch you next week. So, from me, it's goodbye.
And from me, it's goodbye.
Bye, everyone.